Greetings and welcome to STL Soccer Talk, your St. Louis soccer podcast here with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. She's Beth O'Malley.
I am.
And I'm Tom Timmerman, the beat writer for St. Louis City for the Post-Dispatch. And this is the, we should probably thank everyone who's listening right now to this podcast, because you've made it through the whole season, and this is probably the podcast you were looking to least of all out of the entire year, was the podcast in which we discuss the season being over. So if you're sticking it out and bearing with it and saying, I want to listen to this one, and if you're a newcomer, I don't know what to explain your timing, but if you are, thank you for wanting to listen on this this occasion, which is not the sunniest point, even though it's a beautiful day outside as we record this on Tuesday. It's a beautiful day outside.
It's a beautiful day outside.
It's a warm day in November.
It is a nice
but it's
day
a but it's a dark and gloomy time in City FC world.
It is a dark and gloomy time, and we do have to spend some time talking about obviously the second game of this series against Kansas City. It wasn't as bad of a game as the first game was. Mm-hmm. But there were still players making uncharacteristic errors in the game. Bloom, who has been really a great defensive mid, did not play that type of game on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. Mm-hmm. I had to stop for a moment. Was it Sunday? Yeah, mm-hmm. It was. Leuven, again, did not look like his usual self. And the forwards, Klaus and Adeniran, just couldn't seem to do anything with the chances they had. Klaus actually had several touches that just, I wasn't sure what he intended to do with the ball. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like he did either.
Mm-hmm. There are so many things. And the first point you made there, people ask, what went wrong in game two? And the problem was what went wrong in game one. They lost the series in game one.
Yes.
They needed to lose game one. If they had won game one and lost game two, you would be concerned because it would be coming down to a do or die game. But you would not say, oh my God, what's happened? Which is what is the reaction following game one. So, game two was a lot more doable than game one, which was, scary or, uncomfortable or not positive.
They went into game one, which we had discussed, to me, felt like a must-win game.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't win, clearly, mm-hmm. but they didn't even look like they wanted to win that game. And they came mm-hmm. out against the second game looking like they wanted to win. They came out a bit stronger.
Mm-hmm.
We will hear more from the players, from nearly all the players, mm-hmm. tomorrow. But so people can look forward to reading that and seeing some video from that on the website. But it was a strange lack of hunger from a team that had seemed ravenous all season.
Yeah, no one ever, I think, asked me, for an prediction on that on the series. But and I would have said, gosh, it's pretty close. But for City to win that first round series, they had to win game one, because game one was the winnable game. Kansas City is coming off short rest. They played on Wednesday, and that was the game City needed to, that's the one City could grab, and they didn't do it. And once they did that, they kind of boxed themselves in. So a better effort on Sunday in game two, but they, as I wrote, I think, in the first edition story, I mean, they were more aggressive, certainly in the first half, mm-hmm. but they were not necessarily more effective. I mean, they did not have a shot that required a save in the first half. They didn't have one that required one until, like, the 58th minute
right.
of the game. I think Pompeo plays a ball in the box that Klaus puts on the goalie. And it took them that long. And so while they were getting in positions, again, the shots were getting blocked, crosses weren't getting through. It
had just gotten to the point in the first half where I was like, if they can get out of this first half
mm-hmm.
without a goal, mm-hmm. we might be mm-hmm. able to do it in the second half, and then mm-hmm. Kansas scored.
Yeah, and this goes to like any sport. I mean, it goes in hockey. You don't giving up goals or points right before a quarter or a half ends is never a good thing.
Right.
And there was a case where it was 1 minute of stoppage time. 1 minute. They got.
They were so close to being out of there.
14 seconds in, is when it happened. And they got through that, and the ball had been on the other end of the field, and it comes back down, and boom, boom, boom.
Oh.
And my seat in the press box, the angle of mine was perfect on that goal for him, because as soon as he kicked it, I get like, well, that's going in.
Yeah.
I could tell. It's like it's directly on the line I'm on. That ball's going in, and I don't think Berkey's getting to that.
Yeah.
So and that's just, it's never good. I mean, yeah, if they'd gone into the half, okay, now we've got 45 minutes, and now we've learned things, now we get tweet, and we'll take out Adeniran, and we'll put in Pompeo, and we'll do things, and, can happen.
Coming out on a 0-0 game feels very different than coming out on a 1-0 game.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a bad one for him, and that was another one of those moments. Mm-hmm. We're talking about moments they had to win.
It's Carnell's second favorite word, maybe.
After principles?
Growth.
Growth? Oh, yeah. Okay. I think principles is the...
that might be.
I can go through because I've got the transcript of basically every interview that he's done.
We should upload that. I know we'll talk about that.
Then,
we'll keep it a secret
word
for listeners. I'm thinking of things already, yes. but back to the point.
Back to the point.
Which was?
I've long since forgotten that.
Me
but
too.
In any case, yeah, they need... If they'd gotten through that first half and gone
through
the second half.
It was those moments.
And those moments that they didn't win.
Right.
And that cost them in game two, but it the result ended up being much more catastrophic in game two because of what game one happened. It meant the end of the season. But it gets back to, had they won game one like they could have. But this comes back to another thing, which was that when people ask me about the series, and I would say, look, you have one team which is the hottest team in the Western Conference.
That'd be Kansas City.
And another team that isn't. And that was the difference. And another thing, you can start talking about momentum and teams being hot. I think Kansas City had long since not being hot. They were just good. I mean, when you talk over 4 months, they weren't hot over 4 months. They were good.
Right.
I mean, they had been bad in the first 2 months of the year when they were winless in the first 10. But you look at the final stretch, they were consistently winning games. And
you pointed out in one of your articles, mm-hmm. I can't remember which one to be honest, mm-hmm. but you pointed out that City basically in its last four games was outscored 11-2.
11-2 would have
and
been.
And that is not good.
No. No. And you could probably break down what the scoring attempts and the expected goals and everything. I mean, it was just they were outplayed in those last four games.
Yes.
And after those, you look at the last four games, and while there were occasional, in especially in game four, maybe there were moments, but once they took that Vancouver game off, and I could. And as I've said on, if you probably play the tape back on the past three podcasts, say, look, totally expected that a team would have that kind of game after they had just clinched mm-hmm. a conference championship.
I mean, one of the first things Berkey said during the postgame presser mm-hmm. was basically, man, I'm tired.
Yeah, it was the first thing he said. It was essentially, this is a long season.
Yes.
And I think you would find that Berkey feels that way, and Leuven feels that way, and Klaus probably, and I think all of the European guys feel that way. I don't think I'm putting in words in anyone's mouth by even if they haven't specifically told me that, but because this is just, it's a long season,
yeah.
And it is longer than the European guys are used to. I mean, and they're used to, you're playing in Germany, you got a 4 week Christmas winter break,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't exist in MLS. They start playing at the end of February. They were playing in early November. The number of months that they had played in they will have played a game in every month except January and December this year. And they had exhibition games in January. And so, I mean, it's just a lot of soccer. And I, when I talked to Lumen about this last week, and I should have asked him this question and didn't, but I mean, he's a guy that wanted to play in every game and played in every one that he could. The only ones he missed were the ones he was injured on. And, you know, is the lesson learned that you got to pace yourself in this league? And that's tough for, I think, for a lot of the newcomers, just because they're like, okay, I know what a 34-game season feels like. Leuven had played a 34-game season in Germany. Berkey has done it. You know, all these guys have played something like that, but they haven't played this kind of one.
And they may have been playing, and this is my lack of knowledge as to the teams they played with before, but they may have been playing with a team that played a very different style of soccer. Carnell's style of soccer is the high press, it's high energy. One of the reasons why they looked so strange the last four games, because they weren't necessarily playing that style all the time. Mm-hmm. And it takes more out of players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny, when the system doesn't work, there's a lot more running around and unproductive running around. I think there was more unproductive running around. But yeah, I think Leuven discovered this. I mean, a 34-game season in America where you're flying six times to the West Coast and other times to the East Coast, and just the travel you have to put in. I mean, he's a guy that played in Germany. I mean, you know, the difference from Northern Germany to Southern Germany is it's kind of like Chicago to St. Louis. You know, it's not that big. And so it's much easier. You can be home every night. You're not getting in and plane's not landing at 3 or 4 in the morning like it is when they're coming back from the West Coast. And so you wonder if, going forward, if Ed Leuven says, maybe I need to take a game off. I love playing. I want to play. I want to be in every game. But for my own well-being over the course of the season, I need to take a game off. Because I think if you were to take all, I think, 31 games in all competitions that Ed Leuven played in this season, and we're to rank them, I mean, I think the last two games probably would be in the bottom half.
Yes.
And maybe the bottom quarter.
Maybe the last four games even. Yeah. He did not look like himself. And you do wonder if that is a gap in Carnell's management this year in terms of not helping those European players pace themselves a bit better. He is very used to this style. He's coached in MLS before, assistant coached at least. Maybe he should have been looking out for that a bit more.
Yeah, that's where you have to balance, players want to play. And even when there were breaks in the schedules, they may not have been playing games, but they still were training, and they may have cut back 1 or 2 days a week on some of those weeks where they had a long gap or they didn't have a game. But they're still training. I mean, there was like a week when they got eliminated early in League's Cup, which is basically the break they had during the season. But it's funny, I mean, from my years of covering the NHL, NHL coaches never give a player. Players don't want to take off. NBA coaches will do that. NHL coaches never. I mean, and no NHL player would ever go to the coach and say, I need a game off.
Is that why healthy scratches are a big deal?
It is. No one ever voluntarily says, I'm not playing today. I need this game off.
Hockey, though, is a different... I've been thinking about this for a few weeks now. Hockey is a slightly... I don't want to say that hockey is not an athletic game. It clearly is an athletic game. But it's a slightly smaller surface. You have more rotations on and off the playing surface. It's not the same as soccer game. So, yes.
You're wearing skates. You have a stick.
Thanks. I appreciate
that. But
they would not go to their coach and say, I need a break. But they're also not running 8-9 miles a game.
No, they aren't. But they're also taking way more of a pounding.
It is a lot more of a pounding. That's true.
The wear and tear on their bodies is intense. I mean, soccer players put in the mileage. But... hockey players. They
sacrifice their teeth for it.
I mean, in 15 years of covering the NHL, I'm just kind of amazed that you talk to those guys after the game. It's like, how are you standing? But anyway, Soccer players.
Good point.
Yeah, but in any case, you know, do they have to, you know, do that? And there were some games in which Lubin came off the bench in Open Cup games, but the guy logged a lot of minutes, and that's a tough thing to do. So I think it was eye opening for a lot of these players. You know, and that's a lesson though that you need to learn firsthand. Mm-hmm. That you know, someone can tell you it's going to be a long season. You are playing a lot of games, but it's firsthand when you say, "Gosh, this is, you know, one more of these is really getting on me." But yeah, but if you look at the way they played in those last four games, or if you just look after the Seattle game, I mean, they needed someone to come along. They needed jumper cables or a defibrillator. I mean, they needed someone rubbing paddles and clear. And then, I mean, that was what they needed.
They needed the shock to their system. And I was saying last week, I was hoping that loss in St. Louis, mm-hmm, to Kansas City would be that shock to the system. And mm-hmm, it seemed like it kind of revived the heart rate, but didn't set it back on a normal rhythm. I can talk in medicalese.
So as City had to deal with the arrhythmia there.
But you did mention one of the players who, as you described him, is in the running to be the eternal optimist. And
Celio Pompeo, the happiest man alive. And who would be like, okay, what are we going to do next? We're going to go out. I mean, Celio was like that.
He finished this season, and right after the game, during the post-game press conference, he basically was saying, "Let me get back out on the field. I'm ready."
Yeah, maybe I'll take a week off, but then I'm going back out there.
See my family and then come back.
Yeah, he's a kid who grew up in a rough part of Rio de Janeiro and Fortaleza, Brazil, to be technical, I believe. But had a rough, you know, growing up thing, but came to America and has thrived and is just, I mean, you know, if you talk about, you know, there's a stereotypical Brazilian, you know, joy of life mentality, he's got it. And I mean, he's just a happy guy. And he had a very nice showing. I mean, he scored a very good goal, which kept City alive, which made the last 20 minutes of that game far more compelling.
Yes.
than they might have been.
Yes.
Otherwise, as City almost was able to tie that one and
force
penalty kick. There was hope, thanks to Celio Pompeo. And I think he was came in late in game one and looked very good there. And he is an example of what this program has done. I mean, here was a guy who went, you know, would have played at UCLA if not for some oddball situation that came up with the coach getting fired because of, you know, falsified transcripts, and so they, you know, the coach got fired and his scholarship went away, and then he ended up at Virginia Commonwealth. But then, you know, he's a guy who bet on himself, who signed with City 2 to play with them in 2022 and did well enough there that he got the first team contract, and now has done well that he's going to figure, I think, more, you know, in their situation. And at halftime when they came on, and another writer said, "So, what about Pompeo versus Adeniran?" I said, "Well, Adeniran's fast, but Pompeo can beat you one on one. He's got he's one of the best dribblers, one of the best ball guys in the league. And the stats for the league, I mean, when you look at what he did in the minutes he played, I mean, he's up in the higher echelon of thing on dribbling and, you know, key passes made." Compared to guys who played twice as many minutes, mm-hmm, as he did, he's right in there. So, you know, he's one of those. He's a guy who bet on himself. It paid off. Came through the program, grew because he had to learn to play defense to be on the field because that's a requirement. You know, you can't. You know, for this team, you have to be able to do defensively. And he's not the greatest defensive player, but he can play defense that they can. Put him on the field, and he, you know, fits with their style of play.
He's not a complete liability.
He's not a complete liability, and so he's very good about that. You know, Carnell made lineup changes for game two.
He did,
and which were not unexpected. I mean, people asked me about that, and I said, "Look, you know, I think they're going to have Hebert in for Markkanen, and if you take Hebert if you take Mrkonic out and put Hebert in, then you have to make a corresponding move on the right side, which is if you now have a stay-at-home left back in Hebert, now you need an attacking right back, so that means Watts in for Nowinski. Yarrow in for Nielsen. You know, Carnell had said, when I asked him on Friday, he said, you know, his knee is fine. And so that's not a problem. I mean, they've been able to pace him enough to, you know, they haven't had to drain his knee anymore or anything like that. But I think you looked at how this season was for Joachim Nielsen coming in late off of the knee surgery, not having a training camp, and jumping right into the thick of an intense time of year. And it was obvious that he was having troubles out there, you know, that should be fine, you know, he'll get more rest, he'll do more work, he'll get a training camp next year, he'll start from square one with everybody. But, you know, I think they've looked and said, okay, we need just more help there in the center, and so we'll go with Josh Yarrow over Joachim Nielsen. And then, you know, it seemed like after the first game went, okay, they were going to go with two forwards. And so it was going to be Klaus and Adeniran. It was surprising to me that it was AZ Jackson that came out. Mm-hmm. Jackson hadn't been great in game one, but again, nobody was great in game one. But I thought maybe you take out Stroud and he comes in because of his energy. He makes for a good substitute. You know, Jackson ends up subbing in basically an injury time in the game. But you know, the moves, you know, helped. I mean, you know, what also helped was game one helped. You know, I mean, you know, getting slugged in the face produces a reaction, and that produced a reaction on these guys, and it does snap you out of whatever, you know, doldrums they were in. But they needed a lot more.
They needed a lot more.
But let's, and this is one of those things that history will tell us what the impact this game has, this series has, on City's first season. Because let's face it, it was an amazing season. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you can, you know, the word like incredible gets thrown around, and if you think of it, incredible, not to be believed. This was a season really not to be believed.
Right.
I mean, nobody at the start of the season, you know, nobody would have said this is a team that could finish first place in the Western Conference. I mean, that was like zero people.
Right.
I mean, if someone can provide me, you know, documented proof, if you got a, you know, a published thing that said I think City's going to be first place in the Western Conference,
or an unopened letter that you wrote to yourself and postmarked,
notarized, you know, something like that, you know, I would love to see it. I would love to talk to you, but I don't think anyone did that. I mean, you know, I was considered optimistic when I said I think they'll compete for a playoff spot. But we all thought that meant eighth or ninth.
Right.
You know, and they did just totally unexpected, never before things. But I think, you know, people jumped on the bandwagon as it went along. And I think, you know, by the end of the year, there were people that hadn't paid attention. And they're like, oh, well, I should pay. This team's won the conference. You should pay attention. And then they saw those last four games. And it was like, okay, you know, this team's a flash in the pan, you know. And it's ironic for people to think, you know, that they were some sort of flash in the pan. It's the exact opposite. Because over 34 games, they were really good. Or over 32 games, they were really good. They were consistently a very good team. And then the last four games of the season, they weren't. And so if you want to compare for measuring how good this team was, you have one pile of 32 games and a pile of four games and an even smaller pile of two games. Well, but it's America, and playoffs are what matters in America.
Playoffs are what matter in America. But as you were saying, like, you can't even get to the playoffs without doing everything before then. And and yes, they came into the playoffs and immediately stumbled and fell, but they got there. And for an expansion team, as you've been saying, I think pretty much for the last half of the podcast, and it's incredible.
Yeah, nothing like it. I should also note that there have been good expansion teams before.
Yes.
LAFC, Seattle both did very well in their first seasons. LAFC still holds the record for points. Brian expansion team City got the record for wins. LAFC still has record for points. And both of those teams in their first year in the playoffs, they lost in the first round. And then came back and, you know, have established themselves as kind of
consistent
front runners and clubs to be modeled.
Mm-hmm.
To say City would love to be Seattle. They would love to be LAFC. These are teams that have won championships, have been very successful clubs. LAFC not that much older than City, but those have been really successful teams. And that's what City wants to be.
Well, and I think they've definitely set themselves on that path with that first great season. And, you know, after one season, you can look at a team and you can say, what do they need to improve? What did they do poorly? What did they do well? I think there's maybe more in that they did well list than what did they do poorly list.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course, there's a ton of stuff they can improve on, especially
mm-hmm.
the postseason play, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't become Seattle or LAFC without having a good base, and they definitely have that.
Yeah. One thing also they have now that they didn't have before is they've got playoff experience.
You no longer need to write the story about how some of these players have never had
a playoff. And even they were either young guys like Pompeo, who had never been. I mean,
yeah.
17 games of playoff experience, 11 of which were Tim Parker, 2 of which were John Nelson, who was not in the lineup for any game day. And some of those, Jared Stroud's playoff experience, he got in a game, but I think he might have played like 20 minutes
right.
or something. There was just, there was just not a lot of experience other than Tim Parker, and I don't know how much Tim had to, shout at people, no, this is going to be tough. It's going to be tough. It is different. Yes, you played 34 games. The playoffs are different. And they couldn't match the intensity that a veteran. I mean, Kansas City had, Graham Zusi, who I don't know if he got in any of the games, but he had more playoff games by himself than the entire City team. He had played in 20 MLS playoff games over his career, more than the entire City team. And so that's an experience thing that they couldn't match. So, they learned so much from this season. We'll talk more about next season in a subsequent podcast.
Yes.
But if you look at the numbers on this season, that City overachieved. If you look at, they should have had a negative expected goal difference. When you look at the goals they should have allowed and didn't, and the goals they scored and shouldn't, it should have been the other way. But they scored more than they should have. They allowed less than they should have. And so that was a big thing. Now, we all know from all of our statistics courses we've taken the concept of the regression to the mean, and that when you overachieve one year, you almost always underachieve the next year because these things catch up with you. I mean, the only way you can consistently overachieve is if you have an exemplary goalie, and maybe City has that in Berkey. I mean, he's probably on Thursday, probably going to be the goalkeeper of the year. It's tougher on offense unless you have some supreme goal scorers, and Klaus should be a pretty good goal scorer. Where is he going to be on that spectrum? Is he going to be a guy that scores goals out of nowhere consistently? We'll find out.
Right.
But the other thing, though, about this team is that based on their youth and based on the experience, they should be better next year.
Right.
Even if they had underperformed this year, just they're on a growth trend because they're young guys who have learned. They're guys who have never played in America who have learned. And so there's a lot of reason for this team to be better next year. And I remember, Lutz Vandenstiel told me before the season. I mean, we sat in his office and he said, who knows what we'll do this year. We should be good. I think we'll be competitive. But year two, we're going to be really good. And so, they're going to be like dueling, forces there, regression of the mean versus a younger, more experienced team battling it out, you know, at center field of City Park, and on the left and a right, and right to the jaw, and into a gas station. And
you can't see him, but Tom is actually making fists and slightly swinging them as he speaks.
I'm sorry.
I love it.
You love it? Okay. A left, a right, and into a gas station.
There are so many narratives going into next season, and that's a word that I think a lot of people think is a cliche, but this team is full of them. I mean, we just talked about Pompeo and his story, and you can look at Berkey and his story, and with a first-year team like this, there's almost an abundance of those types of stories. You've got the underdogs, and then they became the favorites, and it did seem like, and Carnell seemed to make this point as well, they didn't quite know how to handle being the favorites.
They really
embraced the underdog attitude, and now going into next season, they are definitely not going to be the underdogs. They're going to be much higher in the prediction list than they were at the beginning of this season. So the team is going to have to get used to that and embrace a very different mentality.
I was just thinking, you know, They clinched. There was a 3-game parlay on that September 30th games where they got in, and it was involved 2 games that weren't theirs that had to happen. And after they won, they were like 1 point away, and they just needed some things to make them clinch. But I'm wondering, you know, as we, you know, go into a meta sense and think of alternate universes, what if that doesn't happen? What if those other results don't work in their favor and they don't clinch
and they have
on
to
September 3rd,
battling.
And they have to go into Vancouver and get a point at least to clinch? How does that, you know, change? Is it a different world if they don't get a chance to let up, or if they clinch there and then they let up in the Seattle game? You know, or you know, how does that all work if they had to stretch it out to the last game of the season? We'll never know.
Now you really are talking about alternate universes.
Well, and the other alternate universe is what happens if on the last game of the on decision day, if Portland wins and the results happen that Kansas City doesn't make the playoffs. Kansas City needed a loss and a tie from teams ahead of them in the standings, plus a win itself to get in, and it got in. And, I mean, they were that close. I mean, if those other results... Kansas City not even in the playoffs.
And now part of the question is, there's a philosophy of, okay, you lose in the postseason, and then you have to root for the team that beat you. Because if they end up being the best team, you can say, well, we lost to the best team. You know, we lost to the best team, so it's fine. Or do you root against them the rest of the way? You beat us, you don't deserve anything.
Well, that would be up to the listeners to decide. I think it is harder for them to do that because it is Kansas City.
I think so, too.
I think that's going to be a challenge. It's like how many Cardinals fans could root for the Cubs in 2015 after the Cubs had eliminated the Cardinals.
That was rough.
In the playoffs.
Because I wanted to see history, but I also really wanted that to continue.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that makes this maybe not painful as much for the players as for the fan base. I think losing to Kansas City is for the fan base is like, oh gosh, that has to sting, just because the attitude, the Kansas City fans are now going to be tweaking. I mean, they're holding up signs. You know, this sign was invented by St. Louis. I mean, and it's how they you're just going to hear it, and now. For City fans, there's no defense. In the season series in 2023, Kansas City won 3 of the 5 games they played. And even if City comes out and wins 3 regular season games next year, they're still, we beat you in the playoffs.
We beat you when it matters. When
the game, and so that's gonna just continue to sting for the fan base, and so. Best of luck for you going forward to our listeners out there that you can shrug this off and put it behind you, but it's going to make it. I will say that Kansas City fans in Kansas City saved and used themselves more of their tickets for the playoff game. In the regular season game, it was so red in part because Kansas City fans were like, you're buying here. It's on the secondary market. We'll sell you our tickets. This time they hung on. There were only dribs and drabs of red in the non-supporter
section. The supporter section was very clear on the broadcast and sounded pretty loud.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did not look quite as pinkish in the rest of the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. And that was to be expected. The Kansas City fans rallied around their team, and it was quite the celebration when that game ended. It was quite noisy, and the fireworks going off, and it was quite the scene. But I think you have to look back at St. Louis City season and think, what an accomplishment that this team had to do what it did, and two playoff games shouldn't take away from that. I mean, winning the first five, the 5-1 Cincinnati win, then there were ups and downs along the way. And again, it's a long season. There are going to be ups and downs, but there are more ups than downs. I mean, it ended with a plunge into the abyss, but I think over the course of the year, I mean, talk about a season to be proud of.
Yes.
I mean, this was a team in which the players and the fans who showed themselves really well. Before game one, I was talking to a TV broadcaster who said, "Yeah, it stinks that it's a 9:30 Sunday night start, but if there's any place in the league where you're going to get a good enthusiastic crowd on a freezing cold 9:30 Sunday night, it's going to be in St. Louis."
Yep.
And it was. And St. Louis band came through on every occasion, and it's something, and it was something that we all expected. I mean,
people had been waiting for MLS to reach St. Louis for a long time, mm-hmm. and, the supporters groups for other non-MLS teams before were mm-hmm. vocal and well-organized. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it was expected that City would have some good fans, but I think the team and its players really seemed to win the hearts of more people beyond the typical soccer community or the already soccer fans.
Yeah.
People who I know who went to games came away loving them. The atmosphere, the stadium itself, which makes it easy to like. It's a beautiful stadium. So the team put together an amazing season, a historic season, and overachieved in ways that fans, I think, will appreciate for a while.
Yeah, and I think St. Louis fans, I think, will embrace that. I think there will be many that will say, "Oh, but you didn't. What'd you do in the playoffs?" Because who remembers who was the best team in the National League this season? Who had the best record?
Right.
And that's just not the way we're wired. But and I think going into next season, people say, in some ways, people have to think, say, have to prove itself all over again.
Yes.
It was funny that Johnny Russell, the Sporting KC captain, said after the game, about how they were, underdogs coming in and no one gave us a chance. And I'm like, apparently Johnny doesn't have a subscription to the Post-Dispatch because, Benjamin Hockman did an entire column on how, boy, Kansas City, not the team we want to play.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to play in this playoff. I mean, because it's funny, up until the next to last week, Portland was the team that no one wanted to play. But then Portland didn't make the playoffs. I was like, okay, Kansas City, not the team. Boy, if San Jose wins such penalty kick shootout, but no. We'll just keep toying with alternate universes here.
Well, yeah.
But
we should get you a couple of time stones so you can go back and see what happens.
Yeah. That was always a gift I wish I had, would be to. It's clear that no one has mastered that. And no one will master that, because if someone 100 years from now had done it, we would know by now.
Would we know by now?
I think unless the person came back and was totally, think about it. I mean, if that person had come back and gone to, 1500 or 1200 or 1965, I think we would in some way, someone would have shown up in some way and like,
You've seen the photos that people find, and they're like, "This person's on an iPhone. Look at it." And you look at it, and you're like, "It could be anything."
No, it's not. Yeah, yeah.
But those are always fun to look
at.
But
I think, or if the person came back in time, they did nothing. They came back and said, "Oh, look at that."
So, would you rather travel back in time? Or would you rather be able to know what's going to happen in the future? Not travel in the future, but just know what's going to happen.
You know, how would I live my life differently if I knew when I was going to die? You know, as the podcast now delves into truly deep.
We're not going to discuss which player City might not re-sign on this podcast.
But if I could go in the future, boy, you know, with the job I have, if I could go in the future, I would be the greatest sports writer.
You'd predict all the scores.
The money I would make, I would get, but in any case. It's a wonderful season, and if someone says, yeah, but disappointing because of how it ended, but that can't take away from a truly incredible season.
Did Cole Porter write that song? You Can't Take That Away From Me? Is that Cole Porter?
If not, he should have. Yes. If I could go back in the past, I would, Cole, right, here's a line for you. what else to say? I mean, it's been truly a one-of-a-kind season. And you know, one thing that works in their favor is that they have a longer off season.
Yes.
Training camp will start, you know, second week in January. They'll be playing a game that matters in probably the second week of February. Guys will get rest when they return in January. Rasmus Alm's groin should feel fine. you know, things like that should have changed by then. So the breather will do them good as they dive into training camp, and you know, guys will go home to Shibula Blum will probably get called into a South African training camp at somewhere and see if he gets called in to the Africa Cup of Nations in January, all sorts of things like that.
You're already planning future stories. I see it happening.
You see it now
at the table.
Yeah. Well, there's an international window that comes up, and starting next week. So there's a lot going on.
Well, for all of that.
Yes, we need to thank the listeners.
Yes.
And thank you all for listening to this. I hear, I run into people who say they enjoy it. I've yet to have someone come to me and say, I don't really like it. I tried listening, but it was you were talking about too many Cole Porter songs, and so I turned it off. We haven't heard that, or no one said, "Yeah, I like that Carter guy." What about Beth? Or say, nothing. Or I like Beth. I liked Carter. It was Tom I had news for. Would he just shut up?
And I didn't even say that.
No, and you had. If anyone should have said that, Tom, just shut up. But thank you to all the listeners, and we're not done. I mean, we may be done soon today, but we are not done. I'm sure we'll do other podcasts throughout the off season. We may not be here as conscientiously on whatever day of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday we recorded. But we'll be in as things happen throughout the off season, as there are things to discuss. When we started this, one of the things we asked was, people going to want to listen to this?
And people do.
And people do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I get Nielsen ratings every week, but it sounds like people do.
We get decent numbers. I'm not going to compare us to what is undeniably our most popular podcast, and I think listeners probably know what that is, because the Cardinals are, they have 100 years of stuff to talk about. We only have 1 year of stuff to talk about. We do very well.
So it's an honor to be able to do this. It's been fun to be able to cover this season
As a reader, let me tell you, thank you for all of your coverage. It has been a fascinating season, and I knew you were a soccer fan before, because you and I have talked national team soccer several times before, but having you be able to dedicate your entire beat to soccer has been a pleasure to watch.
Well, thank you very much, Beth. And so we'll probably be back next week. We're checking out.
No.
The list of stories to write or in the off season are plentiful.
I think he added a few to his list even while we were taping. So definitely subscribe to the paper and subscribe to the podcast. Encourage your friends to subscribe to both, because we can't be here without those subscriptions. And thank you.
And thank you. And to the fan base of the team, hats off. Hats off, literally, right there, to you guys for the support you brought to this team. I know the players have been overwhelmed by it. And until next week.
Until next week.
For Beth, I'm Tom, and be seeing you.